Hi, I'm Brian.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we host
The Walking Dead
and Fear the Walking Dead.
Talk Through,
a Golden Spiral Media podcast dedicated to
The Walking Dead
and Fear the Walking Dead
TV shows on AMC. Each episode, we break down what happened, what we think will happen, and talk through our listener feedback.
Because our listeners are very important to us. Isn't that right, Kyle?
Yes, indeed.
Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
Or visit us on our website, walkingdeadtalkthrough.com.
And join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm.
See you soon, survivors. Welcome to another fine episode of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Adam.
And this evening, we are discussing our episode 9, which is discussing season 1, episode 7, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. Wahahaha. Anyway. But before we get into that, we've got some feedback from last week's episode, a couple things. So let's open Hailing Frequencies. All right. Well, the first thing is a voicemail from Cyberman.
Hi, guys. This is Cyberman for Star Trek Discovery. I have a couple of observations about Lorca. First of all, I love the way Jason Isaacs played it when he and Burnham were talking to Stamets about augmenting her mind meld with technology. He was looking at Stamets like, who are you? Who is this person? You are not Stamets. So Jason Isaacs played it beautifully. I enjoyed that very much. Also, Lorca, he's crazy, first of all. I think his triangle was self-inflicted. Either he had someone do it to him, perhaps a Klingon pain stick, something. But he is out for revenge. His entire being is out to avenge the death of his crew. So he is surrounding himself with officers who have proven themselves already, first of all, to not be the best Starfleet officers, and secondly, that they would go above and beyond it. Ash and Burnham both have bad histories with Klingons. So I'm not sure what Lorca is going to do. Blow up Kronos. If Praxis was closer in the timeline, perhaps he was going to blow up the moon. I'm not really sure. He really genocidal. He wants to take them all out, not just a few. So that's my opinion of Lorca. He is a little crazy. He definitely sacrificed the Admiral. I felt bad. I thought she had to try, but oh my God, she was going to her death. Anyway, great podcast, guys. Really enjoy it. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Well, thank you so much, Cyberman.
Yeah, thank you.
We always like to hear that from our listeners. So what do you think? Is Lorca nuts?
He's definitely flirting with it. I'm not sure if he's all the way there, but we'll see how the events of the season play out. It could either pull him back or push him over.
Yeah, I mean, this particular episode that we just watched, he seemed less nuts than, you know, but then again, you know, we only got him in little bits and bites. So, you know, too busy getting killed 53 times.
Yeah, wow. I didn't know Harry Mudd had such a vendetta like that.
Yeah, really. But my verdict is out with him. I mean, I think I need to wait until all 15 episodes have gone across. I mean, there are times when he does seem mad. I think he is certainly affected by, you know, what's happened to him in the war. Nuts or, you know, a villain? I don't think so. I think, you know, his intentions are there, I think, but I reserve judgment until the end of the season. That's my take on it, ultimately.
You know, ever since ever since his incarceration aboard the Klingon vessel, they've brought it up in every subsequent episode. So I think that it's at least it's going to come to some kind of a head this season. He's going to have to figure out if he's going to get past it or if he's going to succumb to the whatever is eating him alive, because I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name of his former ship.
The Baran.
The Baran. Yeah, thank you. Whatever happened aboard there and the real events of how he was the sole survivor are definitely something that's going to play into the way his character ends this season's arc.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. We got some feedback today from Mike in Cleveland. And I say that with all the vocal inflection that it deserves because we are both in the Cleveland area. So to that, I say, anyway, I'm going to read it. It says, "Hi guys. First thing, I want to thank you guys for putting out this podcast every week. For people like myself who enjoy nerding out on all things Star Trek and are hungry to hear as much as possible about Discovery." Well, like I said with Cyberman, we appreciate that you appreciate the effort because that's why we do it. So thanks a lot, Mike. Continuing, he says, "I disagree with the thought that Tyler is a secret Klingon. I've seen that hashtag lately, hashtag secret Klingon. Mm-hmm. We might find out that he is somehow compromised later this season, but not an actual Klingon. After getting injured during his and the captain's escape from the Klingon prison, the doctors who patched him up on Discovery would have caught on to him. Second, Mudd, who was working with the Klingons in the prison and plans on selling Discovery to them, could not have risked killing Tyler like he did. Or he would have attempted to give Tyler up once he realized he was going to lose to save his own butt. In my opinion, people are overthinking a simple recasting choice by the show that Shahzad Latif has more value to them, not hidden under special effects makeup. By the way, Michael Burnham isn't the science officer. She is a science specialist, much like Keiko O'Brien was posted on the USS Enterprise, but not actually in Starfleet." Well, you know, I will say from a story perspective, it seems less plausible to me that Vok is Tyler. So, you know, because, I mean, he certainly, especially, I'd say the last two episodes, doesn't seem to be acting very Klingon. Although, you know, I think it's the Mokai, House Mokai, are mm-hmm. as good as they say, you know, and he's a sleeper cell or something. Maybe he has no idea, you know, and we do know that Klingons, you know, in the past and in this timeline have been, altered to look human, like to the point where the scans and the only thing that seems to give them up is, a tribble. So that's why I bring up, you know, if we ever see Tyler and Lorca's tribble together and the tribble doesn't react, that would be a good indicator that he's not Klingon after all. And I'm not rooting for him to be Klingon. It's what it is, though. I want to stress that I don't want him to be Klingon at this point. I think it would be good for the story, but, you know, I'm liking this character. I don't know about you, Adam.
Yeah, I like Tyler as Tyler.
Now, that said, you know, I mentioned this last week, that I did some detective work on Wikipedia, okay? And if you go to Wikipedia right now and look up Shahzad Latif, you'll see it does not mention Iqbal, the last name Iqbal at all, on his Wikipedia page. However, It did. And the point that I want to make is it did way before he was ever mentioned being cast in this show. Okay. So it has been removed. And I will say it's been removed by, if you look at the history of his article, removed by a person that claims to be Shahzad Latif. I am not kidding. You can look it up, Adam, and you will see in the history, it's somebody by the name of Shahzad Latif. At least that's what they're claiming to be. And at one point it had him listed as Shahzad Latif Iqbal. Okay. So, and I also noticed that there were a couple of edits there before he removed it, and it had been removed before that and put back and removed. But the point being that it was up there for quite a long time, like years, and then removed. So, and removed by a guy going by that name. Now, that doesn't mean a darn thing, okay? It's circumstantial. I cannot prove that he's the actual Shahzad Latif. And it could have been something that CBS is doing to try to, create some intrigue and some, conversation on the web. That podcasters talking about it.
But, mission accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, all I will say is there is evidence there, somewhat circumstantial, that suggests this. I can't say for sure if it's true or not. We won't know until we know what the ultimate fate of Vok is, and whether or not, he and Tyler are the same person or something else. We don't know. But I am intrigued. I will look for it. And either way, if it doesn't pan out or it does, it's got my attention, man. And I think that is mission accomplished.
Anything that gets any sort of media coverage is good for the show. And this has gained so much traction on social media. It's exactly what CBS wants.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's fantastic. Either way, true or false. All right. So he continues and he says, my only complaint would be aired at the podcast, not the show itself. And he says, it's time to stop the weekly CBS All Access whining. Being an over-the-road truck driver that watches a number of CBS shows, I jumped on the service from the moment it was offered last year. I rarely have had any issues, whether watching on my phone or laptop on the road or on my Fire Stick when I'm at home. And yes, there is a rewind option. Okay. I must find out about that. I love that Star Trek Discovery is being credited with driving up subscriptions, because that'll keep the cancel bear off our front porch for a while. I get negativity feeds the internet community, but they seem unwarranted here, in my opinion. And then one quick final paragraph. He says, as I said at the start, I really appreciate what you guys are doing here, so keep doing that thing that you do so well. Well, Mike in Cleveland, thank you very much, and we appreciate everything. And point noted on the CBS All Access, and I will say something positive about CBS All Access this week. I did not have any problems with it at all this week, whether I was watching it on my laptop, which I was doing Sunday night, or watching it on my phone today. Had no hiccups at all. So, I know that they had problems last week, and I wasn't the only one, but it seems like they fixed them, because I don't know if you had any better issues, but I did not have any issues at all this week, and I was happy about that.
Yeah, I was able to fire it right up. I actually used the app on my PS4 for it. I find that it works way better than trying to go through. Well, they don't have a Samsung Smart TV app, so The easiest thing for me to get the best picture quality is run through my PlayStation. Otherwise, I have to Chromecast it or do something where it's a wireless signal and it just doesn't look as sharp. But yeah, no problems. It fired right up. No extraneous commercial breaks this week, which was nice because that's been an issue in the past. Thought it was pretty good.
Now, on the PS4, is there a rewind? Or
yeah,
there. So maybe it's just not on some devices and on others. I don't know. So you know, I mentioned on the Facebook group, I think last week, that I actually, you know, complained about it on put in feedback on their app, and it got responded to. So, you know, again, so I'm not going to be negative on them this week. I only have positive things to say. And, you know, I absolutely recommend this show to every Trekker. I think, anyone who loves Star Trek should be watching this show, and the ones that aren't, and, you know, they've got a grudge because, you know, they don't want to pay $6 a month. I mean, think about it. How much is $6 a month? So anyway, Mike, your point is noted. And, you know, I want to be fair and balanced when it comes to CBS All Access. So, you know, we're more positive this week. So, and if we have problems, we'll talk about them again, but I certainly didn't have any this week and neither did Adam. So, anyway, that's all I got to say. Now let's move on to the actual episode in question.
Well, I wanted to ask you one question about the All Access app before we move on.
Okay.
As someone you've upgraded to the ad-free experience, yes?
I have.
Okay. Are the commercial breaks still noted in your timeline?
They are not. And what I do see, and you know, actually, when I watched it on my phone, there was no real blip or anything that indicated that, you know, there was a commercial. Like, it broke, like, you know, the end of one act to the other. Mm-hmm. But it was very quick. There wasn't, like, any little blip. So, again, and I had seen those things in the past. So, again, you know, kudos to them. I do think that their app is improving, and, you know, as I had hoped and expected it to. The one negative thing, though, I will say is when I go to their site and I go to their app, I still see ads in the app, and I don't want to. I don't think I should have to, paying $10 a month. So
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think if you're go ahead.
Sorry, I was asking about the commercial breaks because I have the ad littered version, the $6. I'm the poor man's version, and the commercial breaks in this episode were very erratic. Like they came up when they should, and they only lasted as long as they should. But most TV shows, when they're written for actual television, you're guaranteed, okay, this is a, let's say this is a 10 or 12 minute segment, and it's very evenly spaced. This thing, the commercials, they're, the entire final 20 minutes of the episode was entirely commercial free. They managed to get all the ads in before that. So it's interesting because it's a, you know, on a streaming platform instead of a traditional network television platform, they can put their commercial breaks wherever they so choose. Very different from the traditional model.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, I also watched Walking Dead last night, and you know, that is a commercial program on a commercial cable channel. And the thing I noticed last night is that, yes, there were commercials, and yes, you know, you could definitely notice them, but they were very varying in their length. So there were some that were, you know, a minute, and then there were others. I think there was one break that was about 5.5 minutes. So it, now, you know, mind you, I didn't time them all, but I know for a fact there were some that were really short and some long. And I guess maybe CBS All Access is doing something similar, just trying to make it harder to, you know, get up and get a sandwich.
Yeah, I think they're just taking advantage of the fact that since they can put them wherever they want, they don't have to, I like that it frees up the scriptwriters to not have to try to segment everything into even chunks. Like if there's 2 minutes and then it makes sense to take a second break, then take it. Don't stretch out the parts that shouldn't be, and don't condense the parts that shouldn't be just to fit the, you know, commercial break format.
All right. Well, we have yet another person joining us. The person is my dog. Shorty is, he's wanting me to pet him, and he's getting in the way. Anyway, Shorty, come on. Okay.
I've been watching a lot of Enterprise on Netflix lately. So, and in fact, I just watched the episode where Porthos almost died. So,
oh,
got a soft spot. That's okay.
All right. Season 1, episode 7, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. This episode was written by, and I think his name is Aaron Eli Kolite. One of these days, I'm going to find out how he pronounces his name. I actually looked for it today. Couldn't find it for sure. And Jesse Alexander. They are both co-executive producers. Directed by, never heard of him before, but I did check his credentials. Very long TV directing history on this guy. David M. Barrett, including lots of CBS shows. All right, let's go into these ship-wide announcements. First, I could not find any errata, so if I've missed something, I probably have.
Incorrect.
I am incorrect that there's not errata. About the episode, the only thing I will say is that in English, the title... Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. That's for next week. Oh, there's my errata. Here you go.
Incorrect.
In my haste, I've got the episode, the meaning in Latin for next week, and I pasted it into this one. Oops. So there's my errata. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought that looked a little out of place, but I wasn't so sure.
All right. Well, anyway. In the news, we have... two items, one of humorous variety and one of not so humorous variety. First of all, you guys remember in our no segment,
no,
I voiced my displeasure about the disco shirts. And it seems like based on this week, those shirts are here to stay. But the other thing, I posted this on the Facebook group. I think I even said, I bet those shirts are going to, you know, be available to buy. And sure enough, they are. And they're not cheap either. But if you go to our Facebook group and look up the posts, you'll see a link to the disco shirts. And they have men's and women's. And I think they're about $30 each. And the funny thing is, there is a trademark there for disco. So I don't know if they got a trademark for the print or something. It seems like a strange thing that they could even get a trademark for.
Well, there's a difference between a trademark and a registered trademark. You could slap trademark on anything, and that's just kind of a preemptive strike. But to get it officially defensible in court, it has to be a registered trademark.
Yeah, and okay, that actually reminds me of a slight thing that I was, whoops. Yeah, I was that too, but I was also...
Incorrect.
I mentioned this last week, Disco Demolition Night. That was the name of it. It was a doubleheader in 1979 between the Chicago White Sox and the Detroit Tigers. And my dad and I watched that doubleheader and watched practically the stadium get blown up. It was crazy. And that's the thing I mentioned about rock versus disco. You can look it up on YouTube. There's several things about it. It was crazy, but I remember it vividly. I was 12. And that's what I think of when I think of disco. But Actually, before we sat down to record tonight, I had gotten wind of a story, and I wasn't going to have time to look it up, so I asked Adam to look it up. So, Adam, what'd you find out?
Well, anyone who's been paying attention to BuzzFeed lately knows that Kevin Spacey has been in the news. The reason this has a Star Trek Discovery connection is because apparently when Kevin Spacey was 26 years old, he made improper sexual advances towards a very young 14-year-old Anthony Rapp. So our intrepid chief engineer Stamets was apparently propositioned by being climbed upon by Kevin Spacey. That would be about 30-some years ago.
Yeah.
The reason this has been making the rounds, especially, is because Kevin Spacey decided to use his response to these allegations as a good time to announce himself as officially gay, which is seems like an odd way to come out of the closet when you're trying to defend yourself against a sexual impropriety allegation. But yeah, I wish this was a better way to get in the headlines for Mr. Rapp, but apparently nothing came of it. So Kevin Spacey's official response was that he does not specifically recall the incident, but he apologizes for any inappropriate drunken behavior.
Now, when did this all break out? Was this today or yesterday?
Yeah, the news stories are all dated today, actually, on the 30th.
Which is kind of funny because Anthony Rapp was actually on After Trek last night. So it's funny that, you know, all these stories come out the day after he was actually on the show. So, and, you know, Anthony Rapp, you know, is he's playing, you know, in a gay Starfleet officer in a relationship, you know, on the show. He is gay. He's 46 now. So that suggests that the incident happened when, in 1985, I believe, if I'm doing my math correctly.
85 or 80, I think it said 86 in the news story.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess, I guess that would work, you know, if you round it up. So, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of crazy things, have come out on the web, you know, the guy from, what's his name? Weinstein. You know, there's been a lot of stuff coming out about that and a lot of, you know, aftermath. I mean, I think the bottom line, you know, is not to be inappropriate, period. You know, treat people with respect. And, you know, I don't know. To me, as well, I think him coming out, using it as an excuse to come out, I hope that wasn't the case, but it certainly seems like it. And it kind of tarnishes a guy who's had a pretty good career over the years. I think he's got 2 Oscars and, you know, he's had the House of Cards for a number of years. And I guess you were also saying that Netflix, like, announced that the next season is the last, which supposedly was already, you know, planned. But anyway, enough about this, I guess, unless you have anything else to say about it.
Just the phrasing of his apology is sketchy at best. I mean, he did one of those Twitter apologies where he posted an image of a lengthier statement to get around the word count issue. And the quote from his own statement is, "I honestly do not remember the encounter. It would have been over 30 years ago. But if I did behave then, as he describes, I owe him the sincerest apology for what would have been deeply inappropriate drunken behavior." If you don't even remember the incident, how do you suppose that it's drunken behavior?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to say, really. I mean, I would say it's disappointing. I think it's good for Anthony Rapp to, you know, I think it's good for anyone to expose these kind of things, because with exposure and knowledge, I think comes change. and, you know, just better appropriate behavior for everyone eventually. These kind of things won't be tolerated anymore. So anyway, let's, without playing Blaine, let's move on. So,
yeah, we've got plenty to talk about with Stamets this week that has nothing to do with this.
Yeah. All right. So, what did you think of Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad?
Well, I decided to reverse my course this week. I decided to take a page out of Stamets' book and be irrationally positive. So, I went for 8.5 out of 10 missed first kisses.
Well, I usually I try to watch the episode at least 3 times before I podcast, and things have been absolutely crazy the last several days. So I only got to watch it twice, and second time was not in the best place to watch it, but I did get to watch it all the way, and there were things that I absolutely loved about this episode on first watch, but there were a few things that I absolutely hated. But the things that I absolutely hated, I didn't hate nearly half as much on the second watch. So as a result of that, I'm raising my original score of 8 to a 9, Gormaganders with Sore Tummies.
Yeah, the space whale with a bellyache.
Yeah, and it almost looked like a Tholian ship inside. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what, you know, but it was triangular like that.
I have to say, they've gotten very creative with various aspects of this show. First, we had Captain Georgiou using Klingon, or wanting to use Klingon corpses as IEDs. And now we got Harry Mudd stashing his spaceship inside the belly of a space whale.
Yeah. All right. Let's just alternate these. So we have listener ratings. Why don't you start?
Well, our good friend of show, Maury Estabrooks, chimed in again this week. He says, I give this episode 8 non-critical ship systems out of 10. To repeat, I give this episode 8 non-critical ship systems out of 10. To repeat.
Yeah, and I will only say for Mark that he gives it 8 out of 10, and you will see why, but, well, that's all I'm going to say. You are in store for what may be the best voicemail I've ever heard.
Okay. Well, Nathaniel Hutchison says, I'll give this one 9 spins of staying alive on the turntable, which, come to think of it, Discovery is basically a turntable.
And I read that and I thought, yeah, it is a turntable. That kind of fits, doesn't it? And that's why I say with the disco shirts, they kind of earned it this week, because they definitely, you know, I mean, that's like sample disco, but nothing says disco more than the Bee Gees playing Staying Alive. So,
right.
You know, and I know that was Wyclef Jean, but nevertheless, you know, heard a lot of Bee Gees in that mess hall. All right, Fred from Netherlands, he put in a voicemail again. He said 7 non-synthahol parties. He's just suggesting that there didn't seem to be any synthahol there, because people look pretty tipsy.
Well, this probably predates synthahol.
Yeah.
Scotty didn't seem to know much about it when he was on Next Generation, so that must have been invented between the original series and Next Generation timelines.
Right, and for those of you that never watched those series, synthahol is supposedly, you know, a alcohol-like substance that, you know, makes you feel good but doesn't have the hangover, you know, type things, and you could shake off its effects very quickly if you wanted to. So, last, is this you, right? Is this you or is this me?
Oh, I'll go ahead and take it. Steve Brown says, I really enjoyed this episode more than I thought I would after the plot reveal. 4.5 out of 5 unremembered first dances.
So we multiply that by 2. It's always funny because I know a lot of networks give it out of 5. So, but GSM does it out of 10. So I know we get those a lot. All right. It is now time for.
Yes.
And we didn't really get any listener yeses. So you want to give your first yes, Adam?
Yeah, it's kind of a downer point, but for the effects, I think Lorca's disintegration at the end of his death montage was really well done. That took a little while. You got to see some skull before it vanished. It was very detailed. I appreciate that.
Are you talking about that one weapon that looked like it had a handle of an old style gun?
Yes.
Yeah. That was an interesting weapon.
They love their disintegrations on this show. Everything seems to do that.
Yeah. And that little, what was it called? The thing that both Tyler and Burnham, took in that eviscerated them.
I meant to make a note of that and I forgot to do so.
Yeah. I think it was dark matter.
Yeah, it was a dark matter something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my first yes.
Yes.
Now, this episode was reminiscent of a couple of Next Gen episodes, most particularly Cause and Effect, which I think is probably in my top 10 of favorite Next Gen episodes, but also reminded me of Parallels. But the thing I liked about it, even though it had similar, type of repeating, Groundhog Day kind of story, I liked how they didn't repeat things. You know, each time it was quite a bit different, and you got a certain, like, they also advanced things from time to time, like the death montage was a fantastic example of that. So you got a lot of idea that things were happening that we weren't seeing, that we didn't need to see. We were seeing the highlights, I guess, of the 30-minute loops. So
yeah, I appreciated that as well.
Yeah.
So refresh my memory, because I'm not so great with the show titles. Which Next Generation episode was it where the Enterprise kept on getting blown up by Kelsey Grammer's ship coming through the wormhole?
That was Cause and Effect.
Okay, yeah, that was my more favorite of the two time loop episodes that they did. And that one, if there was a criticism, is that they really belabored the repetitiveness of it. I felt that this did a much better job of glossing over what you already knew and getting onto the parts that had changed from the previous loop.
Yeah. And that was what I really liked about this episode. You know, it was a similar theme, but it was really revamped in a good way, and, treated the viewer like, they had a little bit of a, that we were paying attention and we weren't dumb. I always appreciate not feeling like, the writers and producers think we're dumb. I don't think that happens on this show, but, I would say more than once on The Walking Dead, which is the other show that I podcast about, I have felt that way, unfortunately. Do you have any more yeses?
It's not episode specific, but I just picked up on it. In looking back through old episodes, I have to say, it's going to sound weird, but Saru's mouth clicks. Every so often, he'll open or close his mouth, and there'll be a little clicking sound that sounds almost skeletal. And with the look of the character being so, exoskeletal almost. Like it's clear he's got skin, but it looks almost like an exoskeleton. I appreciate that more insectoid kind of just little nuance that they add to his character a little bit.
Yeah, I actually would have appreciated more of him in this episode. He wasn't in it too much. Although from the previews, it looks like he's in the next one a lot. My final yes.
Yes.
Speaking of the way that the episode was structured, no cold open at all. Went straight into the theme, which I appreciated. I thought, that's rather novel. They went, straight from the previously on to the theme with, and I guess structurally, I guess it made sense to do that without a cold open. So anyway, I appreciated that. I didn't think it was that incredible, but it was worth noting.
I did notice that they did that, which was strange. My head scratcher was, why do we need a recap? There was almost nothing in this episode that required a recap.
I guess most of it was with what happened on the prison ship. I guess, the three of them, that was probably the most that needed to be told again. I don't know. All right. Unless you have anything else, I'm going to move on.
No, let's keep going.
Okay. Do you want to move on?
No!
Well, yes, we do. And we don't have any listener no's. Do you have a no? I think you do.
I do. I want to start with the holographic controls. I know we've covered this is different than the typical argument of holographic communications. And this is only shown in the, I know this has been in other episodes, but it really showed Lorca using them in the midst of his death montage. And the fact that we see Iron Man using controls like this in present day Marvel movies, it's just a very of the moment. It's effects du jour. It doesn't look futuristic. It just looks modern day sci-fi-istic.
And first time I can remember seeing something like that prominently featured was in Minority Report, which I think came out like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So, my first
no.
I thought that I'm going to save my second one, which I think is bigger. For now, I'm going to go to this one, and that is near the end. It seemed like everyone was aware of what was going on, which seemed to fly in the face of, what we had seen on initial loops. And I thought that was a bit of a stretch. I thought that it was kind of, given that the loop was 30 minutes long, and yes, we know that Stamets was, picking up information from each loop, I really had trouble believing that he could convey all of that information to all of the officers on the bridge and they would know exactly what was going on and believe him. That to me seemed to be quite a bit of a stretch. And I was noticing it, not just that in that iteration, but the last, I'd say the first two thirds of the episode, I wasn't noticing that really at all, but in the last third, it seemed like people were picking up things, and I thought that was a bit of a stretch, and it almost seemed like the writers had like a masterpiece, and then they couldn't completely finish it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It seemed like the other characters that weren't outside of the normal time flow also got savvier with each loop. And yeah, I had an issue with that. Now, the interesting thing here in your notes is that you say on subsequent viewings, it didn't bug you as much. So yeah. What was the change?
Well, I would say that it didn't seem to, I seemed to just enjoy the story more on the second viewing. And and I wasn't as annoyed. The thing that I was really annoyed with, and I even said it when I was watching it, was I thought that the ending was weak. Like, of them, you know, actually getting Stella and, you know, her dad, and that's his punishment. Because I hate to say it, but that Stella wasn't as annoying as the Stella that we see in the original series, you know, mm-hmm. which of course wasn't the actual Stella. It was a robot, but you know, that Harcourt, what are you doing? You know, we could see sort of a seed of that, but, you know, and I also thought that, Stella was quite a bit better looking than that version of Stella.
Yeah. I was looking at that thinking, if that really was his punishment, that's a pretty nice punishment.
And younger too. I mean, you know, she seemed to be, I don't know, late 20s, maybe 30, mm-hmm. compared to, you know, and obviously Mud isn't. So I don't know. Seemed to be a pretty good deal to me. So it didn't seem like a lot of punishment to me. I just thought that he really got off light given everything that, you know, he tried to do. And like I say, the first time I watched it, I even like vocally said, that's weak. And normally I don't do that kind of thing, but it annoyed me a little less on the second viewing. So that's why it's a 9 and not like an 8 or a 7.5.
Yeah. And I knew as they were being vague about the two people coming aboard and all that business, I saw the ending coming. And on one hand, yes, I totally agree. It's a weak ending. But as I said in my ratings, I'm being overly positive this week because the ending just felt so original series, because they always had these campy underwhelming punchlines at the end of so many of their episodes. So to have this one, the big punishment, the big buildup, what's going to happen to Harry Mudd now that they caught him? Oh, they're going to give him to Stella.
And that's the thing too.
It just needed that little, the playful like flute line or whatever that was in the soundtrack with every episode.
Do, 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 do. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the one you're talking about. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, based on what we see him do in, I think that was iMud. It wasn't the first episode he was in. I think it was the second one he was in where we see the robot Stella. And I guess, you know, it could be implied that she will become that really annoying Stella, but she just didn't seem to be that annoying. She seemed to be, I don't know, kind of smothering, but you know, I could think of worse things. All right. You got another one, I think.
Yeah. My second no actually goes to the Wyclef Jean. I don't know what else they can do with this, but the constant 20th or 21st century references when this is 200 years beyond that, I just feel like they would have been listening to something besides current day pop music. The whole party scene just looked like a college frat party that would go on nowadays. Didn't look like anything from the future whatsoever.
And for that matter, a much better party that we saw on Next Generation, especially where, you know, the big thing was to crank out the symphony.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, if I was going to do a party 200 years from now on a spaceship, the first thing I would do, shut off the gravity.
There you go.
Anti-grav party. Then you can have like drinks floating through the air at people. So you have to like catch the globules and do all kinds of fun stuff. This just was just, you know, a bunch of 20 somethings hanging out on an ordinary Friday or Saturday night like they would in current times.
I can't disagree. All right. So let's get into feedback and open hailing frequencies. All right. Well, we're going to play this out of order a little bit because we want to end with Mark. So we're going to play Fred's feedback. So here it is.
Hello, Adam and Brian, and all listeners to the Star Trek Discovery podcast. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback on episode 7. I give this episode, again, as last week, 7 out of 10 non-Sinterhall parties. And that's my first remark on this episode. In this time and frame of the Star Trek universe, is there already Sinterhall? Or is it alcohol? If you look how people react, Tilly, for instance, at the party, I think it's real alcohol. And I find it strange that Lieutenant Taylor is then ordered to the bridge, coming from a party. But obviously, it's not much of a problem. Actually, I don't like time loop episodes in series too much. But this was quite okay. And that's because most of the time loops were quite different. So they start more or less the same. And even the start is not always the same. They're quite different from the beginning onwards. So that's why I think it's less of a problem. Otherwise, I find it mostly a very cheap way of filling the time of an episode. What I really missed is the onward story about Admiral Cornwell. What's happening to her? I was really looking forward to see what's going on there and whether we get information, if Captain Lorca put her there on purpose. I like the role that Stamets plays between the different time loops. In other series or even in Star Trek, you often have time loops where the people are getting into loop and loop again, and then suddenly they're going to realize, did I experience this already or not? And then you are already two or three time loops further. So I liked very much that there was an intermediate person between the different time loops who had to convince that there was a time loop going on. So that was all for me for this episode. I really don't have time to analyze the episode more thoroughly, because then I have to watch it again and I will be too late to put my feedback in. At the moment, it's just 15-20 minutes before your deadline. So all the best. Till next time. Greetings, everybody. Greetings, Mark. Bye. This is Fred from the Netherlands.
I think it's funny how he gives greetings to Mark as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just everybody else, apparently.
Well, no. I mean, he said he singled us out earlier. So, Fred, you make a good point. Drunk officers. I can't, especially it. I agree. It didn't seem like there was any Sinterhall going on. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you'd want to have officers that were at a party, you know, come to the bridge, even if, you know, they're not like, you know, completely wasted. Just going to be a little slow on their response times.
Yeah, you want to have your officers in tip-top shape, but off-duty is off-duty. You know, it's similar to a firefighter or anything like that. If you're on call, then, yeah, you got to keep your stuff together. But if you're not on call, then, all right, do whatever you got to do. Free time is free time.
I would agree that I did want to know what was going to go on with Cornwell. I'm thinking we'll probably see her this week in this coming episode. And the reason why I say that, although I don't remember if I saw her in the preview or not, but she is going to be on After Trek next week. So, you know, there's a good probability that she'll be in the episode, I would say, based on that.
Which is good. I'm looking forward to getting back to her story as well.
All right. Next is Stefan. So Stefan says, is it okay to call this a deja vu episode? What do you think? I think it is okay, Stefan. I'm coming off a Stranger Things marathon this weekend. So this show hasn't been at the center of my attention, but this was really great stuff. I haven't watched Stranger Things. I probably won't watch it for a little while because I got too much going on. What about you? Did you watch it yet?
I got a few episodes in. I'm trying to take my time with it, you know, because the sooner I get through it, the longer I have to wait. So
right.
I'm trying to dole it out in small amounts.
Yeah. The most important thing that we learned aside of the story is that Stamets work outside the timeline in his mindset, and that makes him more, I wrote down eccentric. I don't know if that's the right word, though. And he saves the ship. Maybe essential? Maybe that's what it was. I think a hint is put out about Ash Tyler when Stamets asks Ash how he could be so calm after that long in Klingon prison. A small hint for the audience, whatever that may lead. Or, again, more deception. We will see. I think that this will be one of those episodes that I wish to go back to and watch again in years to come because it's simply fun stuff. So this is the episode where Rainn Wilson gets to shine in the shape of Harry Mudd. He kind of ends up playing a bit unpolished, a rough oddball. Sorry. He kind of ends up playing a bit unpolished and rough oddball characters, and it's just entertaining to watch. I recently saw him in Super, and he was so crazy, and I also appreciated what he brought to Backstrom some years ago, a show that never took off. But Harry Mudd is coming back, right? Even if Stella got a grip on him, now he switched one prison to another. Yeah, I don't know if he's coming back. I think I only heard that Rainn Wilson was only in two episodes this year. I think that might have been when they were at San Diego Comic-Con. I know that he was the moderator, and I think he said then that he was only in two episodes. Of course, he may have been in another episode later, but I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back in season two. What do you think?
I think he's good for at least one more episode, but if there's only 15 episodes in this season, being in two of them is enough Harry Mudd. You don't want him to come back too often because he really wasn't that essential of a character to the original series. You risk overexposing him. Even with a character like Q, for example, who had huge implications, they knew that they could only use him sparingly. So I hope they exercise the same restraint with the Mudd character.
And it made me wonder if we would see Q in this show, but I was thinking about it. I'm like, no, I don't see that happening. For one thing, John Delancey's quite a bit older now. I don't think it would play as well, but just, you know, we don't need to have Q in every Trek show there is. Of course, I don't think he was in an Enterprise, but yeah, I don't think we'll see him. So, all right. Do you have anything else to say about Stefan's feedback?
Well, he trips on a couple of things that I've got for our discussion segment coming up here. So I'll just reserve that for now.
Okay. And now for the much teased feedback from Mark.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Adam. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 8 random communications officer men. I really like this episode. I've always liked Groundhog Day stories, and this one was really good. And the special effects were great, especially all those killing scenes. And getting Mudd back so soon after his first encounter was a real treat. Hey Brian, hey Adam. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 8 missing spore drive pieces. What a great episode this one was. And 2 in a row with disco in it. The rap music with the disco melody was very interesting. And who knew Tilly was such a party animal? Hey, Adam. Hey, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 8 random acts of physical interaction. This was a fun episode. I really like what they're doing with the Stamos character. He's fun and he's quirky. I'm just wondering how long this is going to keep going until we find out what that mirror image thing from a couple of episodes is all about. Hey, Adam. Hey, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 8 scientific dance lessons. What an awesome episode. However, I don't know about you, but Michael Brennan never being in love didn't seem like that much of a big secret to me. Now, I have to say, if Taylor is a Klingon spy like the speculation's been going on, he's doing a phenomenal job at blending in. That actress who plays Stella, she's hot. And anyone who watches Wynonna Earp will get that reference. Hey Brian, hey Adam, Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 8 distressed Gormaganders. I'm liking these more one-off type episodes, more so than the serialized ones, but giving us just enough of a hint of continuity. Although, it is too bad that most of what we saw in this one episode will be forgotten by everyone except for Stamos. And exactly how did they defeat Mudd at the end? Michael and Tilly figured out that the non-critical systems were still operational. But how did they explain that to Stamos? So that he could then, in turn, explain it back to them during the next time loop after Michael killed herself. Hey Brian, hey Adam, Mark from Ontario, Canada here. I give this episode 8 weird and interesting nights. Wow, wasn't that a good episode? Although, that wasn't really the punishment I expected for Mudd. I mean, a man of his skill should easily be able to get back at it very soon. And I expect him to be a thorn in Lorca's side again in the very near future. And did anyone collect that reward for Mudd that Stella's father put out? Wow, I just got the weirdest sense of deja vu. Anyways, keep up the great work, guys. This is Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
I heard this one. I played it at work, and I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, that was, oh my gosh, that was so incredible.
If there is an award for like best voicemail for a podcast, I gotta dominate you for this one, Mark. I gotta say, it's so amazing. So you, of course, get the showcase. I thought that was amazing. Well executed. And anyway, what can he say?
I never considered putting a time loop in my own voicemail.
And I loved how, you know, each time there was an explosion. And not all of them sounded the same either, which is actually accurate. So, He did notice some of the similar kind of things that I mentioned earlier, like the punishment and, you know, how it seemed like everybody was cluing in on stuff near the end. So I'm glad to see that I wasn't the only one feeling that way. But yeah, terrific. We're so lucky to be getting these voicemails from you, Mark. What can I say? Deeply grateful. All right. I guess that's it for our feedback, this week. So it's just up to us for the rest of it. So what would you like to start with?
Well, I'd like to explain my rating. Let's face it, Star Trek has done these episodes before. This is not a new idea.
Definitely not.
The time loop. And it's such an easy thing from a writing standpoint because you could do whatever you want and there are no consequences. Kill as many characters as you want, blow up the ship, you know, whatever. Time's just going to reset anyway. So I was prepared to actually really, really downvote this episode. But then I realized that if you just forget about all that for a second and just watch the show for entertainment purposes, it's a really fun show to watch. So the fact that they actually diverted from the new format that Discovery has, which is the serialized format where you get forward progression in the story every week, and just decided to really go all in on the classic Star Trek episodic style here, I thought it was okay. I chose to just enjoy it instead of critique it for not being what Discovery has taught us to expect.
Yeah, and I think that kind of explains my feeling on it, you know, on the second watch, because the first time I watched it, it was kind of like, you know, this is an amazing episode, the first two thirds. And then, you know, by the last third, I was getting not really tired of the format, but just finding that they were taking a few shortcuts that I didn't appreciate and didn't think was plausible. Like I was saying before about, you know, how could Stamets get all that knowledge, you know, dispersed to all those people in such short order? That to me, you know, didn't make a lot of sense. And to do it under, you know, Mudd's nose, cause yeah, maybe he could get on the, you know, shipwide announcement and do one of these and say, you know, attention. But I don't think that's what was happening. So, and the ending, what I said before, really annoyed me, but I just kind of surrendered to it on the second watch because, like you were saying, I think it was a really fun episode to watch and, you know, made me feel good at the end, I think. So I think it was good. I don't think it was their best episode, but I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, the other thing that these sort of time loop episodes are really good for, I'm noticing that while they may have said that these shows are about 8 million an episode for this series, I don't think that's a hard number per episode. I think they spend maybe 10 on some episodes and only 6 on others. Is this one, they were able to reuse the same few sets, the same couple of effects, and really not go anywhere new. So it was a very efficient way to fill a nice hour-long story by just repeating the same scenes over and over again. And I know we've had people comment that the effects looked really good. I thought the Gormagander actually looked pretty bad. I thought that looked like Enterprise-level CGI, maybe even going back to Voyager level. It was kind of cringeworthy, especially when Tilly was walking around it. It was really, really hard to buy into that thing actually being next to her.
Yeah. I wasn't really, I didn't mind that so much, but I definitely think that it was a bottle episode, you know, by the classic definition of bottle episode, you know, limited sets. Yes, there were some special effects, but there weren't a lot of them, and they were more, you know, on people, you know, versus, mm-hmm. you know, crazy things going on in space. And, you know, we saw, I think one time the ship exploding from outside, but, it was mostly, you know, internal stuff that we saw. So, okay. So I mentioned cause and effect. The other episode, and strangely enough, I think these two episodes are both written by someone who is involved on the Orville now, Brandon Braga. He wrote both of them on Next Gen. So Cause and Effect and Parallels, which is not a time, you know, something involving time, but it's a similar kind of thing because it was alternate universes. And it was kind of like how, you know, we see a progression of things happening. And we also see, I guess the thing that reminded me most of it was we saw a progression, you know, somewhat of the things going on with Tyler and Burnham. And I should correct Mark on it. I don't know what he called her, but it's her name is Burnham, not
Brennan.
Brennan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I appreciated that in the Parallels episode that we see a relationship, you know, had developed between Worf and Troy, which I didn't love the two of them, you know, becoming a couple, and certainly didn't last very long, considering she marries Riker eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw the resemblance there. So it just reminded me of, you know, some comfort food.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about these episodes, the kind of standalone episodes like this. You can just go back and watch it at any time, which, you know, was brought up in listener feedback as well. It's nice to have a continuing story over the entire series, but at the same time, if you do just want to jump back and check out an episode years later, you're not going to know what's going on in most of these cases. It's very much you have to watch it now to keep up with what's going on. Even, you know, Walking Dead, I tried to refresh myself with some episodes from last season. I didn't have a clue what was going on because it was too long since I had seen the previous one to know where the story had picked up from.
Yeah.
This thing, you can pop in anytime and you'll always land on your feet.
Yeah. Well, especially in the last couple, you know, and of course, not that much has occurred yet. I mean, we've only got 7 episodes in the can. So, but yeah, you know, I think there is a time and place for things being a little more self-contained while still advancing the story somewhat. So, you know, cause I would say in both cases, last episode and the episode before, or sorry, this episode and the episode before, I would say there was some advancement of the story, not so much in this one, but I, you know, a little bit in the previous one with what happened with Cornwell and all, and Lorca's character.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, you know, also part of the DNA of the show, or you know, of the franchise. So I think it's good. I do want to get back to the war though, and find out what's going on, and, you know, get back to what's happening with Cornwell, you know, get some kind of idea about this whole Vok Tyler thing and get that answered. I'm hoping it's going to be answered before the season goes into hiatus there in a couple of weeks. I don't want to be thinking about that around Christmas time, you know.
Yeah, I could almost see them doing it like a cliffhanger. Maybe that's a big reveal at the end of the 9th episode.
Yeah, I think so. What else do you got?
Well, I find myself liking Lorca more and more for just an interesting character to pay attention to. And did you pick up on how he basically did not care at all about the Gormagander?
Yeah, I did. You know, and you could tell he was only doing it because he had to. You know, if he wasn't forced to do it, he wouldn't have done it. You know, like he was done with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've never seen a starship captain that came across something like this and didn't go full nerd and go, "Oh, I can't wait to examine this and explore it because I'm a scientist at heart." He's like, "No, all right, I guess we're going to cart a space whale somewhere. Just go do it. Don't bother me with it." didn't he specifically say, "I don't care, just go take care of it"?
Yeah, he did.
He's such a different type of captain. It's so entertaining to see a ship that doesn't operate like a starship we expect would.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of that is the advancement of you know, storytelling and this. It's not, we said it early on, it's not your father's Star Trek. This is different, and I think it's okay to be different. I think it's okay to, if Discovery played like another one from the 80s to the knots, you know, in that whole group of four series back to back to back to back, I don't think it would be all that successful. I think it would be successful, but I think that this is so far being wildly successful. I think it's exceeded. Well, I don't know if it's exceeded my expectations, because I had a lot of high expectations and I was hoping I wasn't going to get disappointed. And so far I haven't been, you know, so, that I think that would be the extent of it. All in all, you know, I thought it was a good episode. I think if I watch it again, which I probably will do, you know, before next week, I'll probably even like it more, because it was just, it was a feel good episode. Although I do have to agree, with something you said about, you know, the 21st century, you know, music. I would have expected, at least they could have had something that sounded a little more futuristic in there. I mean, they could have played a couple of old tunes, but you know, what they also play, Al Green or something like that, which is even older, you know?
Yeah. Star Trek loves to give these, 20th century and 21st century references as throwbacks. Like the characters are interested in ancient history in one way or another, but I think we've had enough of that. I'd like to see something a little bit. You could still be interested in old/ancient history and go 22nd century or late 21st century. Calling back to things that we know from our own pop culture is too on the nose.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, speaking of going too far with something, do you think they went a little too far with the Harry Mudd character? The fact that he boasted about killing Lorca 53 times.
And I was trying to determine if that's the 47, and I have to go back and check that. But we see in the montage him killing him four times. And I was trying to remember, and I didn't have a chance to go and look to see if we saw two kills of Lorca before that. And that would have made 47 that we didn't see.
That's getting deep.
I know.
But I mean, how much do you have to hate someone to kill them 53 times over and still not be done?
I think you have to hate him quite a bit, but
I never got the sense that Mudd was that malicious. He's a con man and he's no one to be trusted, but I didn't think he was that cold.
Yeah. Yeah. And killing him 53 times, it did seem a little redundant.
Now, did they actually, was it made clear that it was a specific fixed amount of time in each loop?
Well, statement said 30 odd minutes. And I think it was one of those things where he could probably start the next loop a little ahead, but I think he had like a timer.
Okay.
Because at the end, you know, if he didn't, you know, start the next loop by that time, it was going to be done. So yeah, I think he could start the next loop anytime he wanted, but,
within a certain amount of time.
As long as he started it before, you know, the time had elapsed. Because
okay.
Any time, you know, if he started it before the time elapsed, then whatever, you know, happened in that last loop was going to stay.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was doing the math on that. When he said, I killed you 53 times, I'm like, okay, 53, at least 53 times, 30 minutes apiece. That's 26 and a half hours this guy has been awake. I think the last loop, Mudd's leaning against the wall and he gives a little yawn. And I wasn't sure if that was a yawn of boredom or a yawn because the writers realized that he had been up for over a full day just looping.
Yeah. You know, he killed Lorca 53 times. Was he counting, you know, each loop from, you know, pressing the button or whatever, was that a kill, or was it 53, you know, personal kills? And, you know, some of the ones we saw in that montage, like he spaced them one time.
Oh yeah. Beamed about into space. That was twisted.
Yeah. I don't know if we've ever seen that before. We've seen people get, like, you know, sucked out an airlock, but I don't know about beamed out.
Wouldn't you think that'd be a very common way to kill people in Star Trek? I mean, if you had a transporter and you're boarding a ship, that'd be the easiest way to do. Just tag them and beam them into space.
Sure would. Quick and painless, at least for you.
Yeah, right. Depends on which side of the glass you're on.
Something you have in your notes there that you didn't mention yet that I also was thinking about today. So, that's the threat ganglia.
Yeah. They don't seem to be working very well. Those should have been going off all episode.
Yeah, you would think so. And we didn't see them go off at all. Like, even at the point of, you know, when, Mud, you know, shows up on the bridge, and even when Mud threatened him, you know, I didn't see his threat ganglia. They're very inconsistent.
Or he's just adapting to being under constant danger.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe we'll find out more about those threat ganglia and how they work, and because it doesn't seem to be all that consistent, like we were saying. Like even on the Shenzhou, you know, when they're in the heat of battle, you would think the threat ganglia would be going off then.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see them then either. So I don't know. Weird.
Yeah, a little inconsistent on that.
Do you have anything else? Because I'm done. I don't have anything else.
Nope. No crazy theories this week. Just looking forward to, like you said, getting back on the war story. I want some more forward progression now that we've gotten a couple kind of standalone episodes out of the way.
Yep, I agree. All right. To submit your feedback to us and connect with us, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, and you can use SpeakPipe widget. In fact, all three were used this week. So we got some text feedback that way. We got voicemail that way, and we got SpeakPipe feedback voicemail. Cyberman sent her feedback in that way. So we also have a voice line. That's a 304-837-2278. We also have the email, which we got some feedback in that way too. StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Or, like most people, you can post on the designated episode thread that we put out every week prior to the episode. That is at, and of course, you know, everything else that goes on. And we have been getting in new members practically every day lately. So go to facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. We also have a Twitter at StarTrekGSM. In fact, now that I think of it, we got one talking about the secret Klingon from Ken from Chicago, saying that maybe Tilly was the actual secret Klingon, which I think is kind of funny. The deadline for submitting feedback this week is at 6 p.m. Every week is at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Monday after the episode has aired. That doesn't give you a lot of time, but if you are, you know, watch the episode as quick as we do, you can get your feedback into us. Another thing, to support us, you can, when we post about our episodes on Twitter and Facebook, share them. That always helps get the word out, you know, and get new listeners. We want that. If you have friends that watch Discovery and they're, you know, listen to the podcast, please let them know about us too. Another way to support us is by giving us a rating and review in iTunes. And we got a new review this week in the UK. Our first UK review came from Captain Stevie C, and he gave us a 5-star review. So thank you, Captain Stevie C.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't mean to put that on. Oops. I meant to say.
No, we'll do it live. F*** it.
Anyway, sorry about that. But
things happen.
Yeah. Captain Stevie C, thank you for your 5-star review. And it's also worth saying, subscribe to us in, you know, if you use iTunes, subscribe to us, or I should say Apple Podcasts now on the phone or tablet. Subscribe to us there. If you do use a different app, subscribe to us. That will help you get the new episodes whenever they come out. And we have other ways to support the network. They are found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And at some point, we will sit down, Adam and I, probably over the hiatus, and try to figure out what we're going to do as far as the Patreon. But we are going to get a Patreon together, and we'll figure that one out. Okay, so our next episode is, and that's the one that I got the definition of, Season 1, Episode 8, which is Si Vis Pecum Parabellum, which in English is, stands for, if I can find it, if you want peace, prepare for war. And that's about all we know. In the previews, we see a lot of look like Saru, Tyler, and Burnham on an away mission, which we haven't seen on an away mission, I think, since first or second episode. So that's good. Actually, I guess the Glen was the last away mission, right? That So third episode.
Yeah, that'll be good to see them getting off the ship for a change. There's only so much starshipping you can do before it gets a little boring. It's nice to get a nice change of scenery, literally.
But until next week, I'm Brian.
And I'm Adam.
Peace and long life.
And live long and prosper.